Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Which mid-round wide receiver could be a league winner? Let's talk to the pros. Welcome in, everybody, to Fantasy Pros. This is the Fantasy Football Podcast. It is me, Joey P, Joe Pizzapia. That, of course, is Kyle Yates, and it's you. And today's topic is the mid-round wide receiver rundown. That's right, we did the running backs early in their week, and now it's time to change gears and take a look at the wide receivers in the clump, in the glob, the guys that we want to differentiate, the ones we like, the ones we're not so high on, and the ones that maybe have some potential to get into this group that maybe we feel like deserve a little bit more respect. Tags is still on vacation in the woods. Yates, when he comes back from his writer's retreat, how long will the Tags beard be? That is the question.
Oh, I think if we are projecting and we are going to actually do, like, I think it's going to hit here. I'm not expecting here. Okay. If it did hit here in a week, we've got other concerns.
Yeah.
So I think right here, it's going to be a big beard. I feel like
he might be more beard than man at a certain point. It's just too tough to know. And of course, we brought on a great guest today. You probably know him already from NumberFire and FanDuel. He's the one, the only, JJ Zacharyson. JJ, we appreciate you making the time to hang out with us today. And, you know, I got to ask you this question right at the top. We just had a discussion the other week about choosing Twitter handles. And then years later, if you have any change in opinion or regrets, you've been late round QB on Twitter for a very long time, but we're in a QB renaissance. Are you still late round QB after all these years?
Yeah, you know, we are. It's one of those things where to me, it's more just like a random name that has no tie to anything at this point, because I branched out. I'm doing more than just analyzing the quarterback position and strategy at the quarterback position. But yeah, you're right. There is a renaissance, and I'm much more open. Last year, I was much more open too to getting more of those middle round quarterbacks. I'm still not early round quarterback, but I can understand the middle round and the late round guys.
Well, you got to stay on brand, JJ. At the end of the day, you got to stay on brand. But I was just curious, you know, it's like that first email address, you know, where you think you're cool when you're 13 or 14 years old, and you look back and you go, oh, that was a bad decision. What the hell was I thinking about with that first email? But alas, it's great to have you on the show. And like I said, we've got a lot to get to. And before we even jump in, I want to remind everybody about fantasypros.com/draftwizard, where you can get the cheat sheet creator, because draft season is here. It's not coming. It is here. It's upon us. And the Cheat Sheet Creator is phenomenal. It's a great tool that allows you to combine all of your favorite experts into one consensus sheet. So basically what happens is you take Yates is my favorite, and I like Dan Harris. You put those two together and they're all there. And every time they make a change to their rankings, guess what? It gets reflected in that cheat sheet that you can use. You can even create customized rankings for your league using our projections, or you can even import your own rankings. You can also further customize your cheat sheet with tiers and player notes. Plus, you can use your cheat sheet in both the Draft Simulator and the Draft Assistant tools on both our website and Draft Wizard app. So make sure you check out our Cheat Sheet Creator. It's like having Yates, Tags, me, Dan, or all of us all in there at one time with you at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. And who wouldn't want one of us drafting with you? Of course, we bring the beer to the draft too. I mean, that makes like the best part of all of that. So we are going to go ahead and break down some of the fantastic wide receiver talent that we've got here that maybe isn't quite getting the love that they should. These are the mid-round guys, the players that we see right now that are kind of falling out a little bit of that top tier, but they're certainly going to make huge impacts, and getting the right guys here in this grouping are going to be important. So we're talking about the ADP wide receivers outside of wide receiver two. So that's 25 and on to a reasonable degree. And I want to start with Odell Beckham Jr. And JJ, I'm going to start with you since you are our illustrious guest today. We got Odell at 25. And then a little bit later on, you have Jarvis Landry at 38 in terms of wide receiver ADP on Fantasy Pros. Now, when we're looking at these two guys, what do you think about their presence in this Cleveland Browns offense? What happened when Odell got hurt? What this offense evolved into? And in your opinion, looking at the value of these guys on the board, how do you assess which one, if either, you want on your team? Did the Cleveland Browns offense kind of become something new without Odell? And can he work himself back into it?
So I think that the one thing that we have to keep in mind is the fact that last season, Kevin Stefanski, it was his first year there. Baker Mayfield had to get used to this new offense that he had not played in before. And so we look at the Baker Mayfield splits and we see him do poorly or average during the front half of the season. Then he sort of explodes and does a lot better from an efficiency standpoint during the second half of the season. And so you look at that and you could say, oh, it's Odell Beckham and it's not Odell Beckham. But I look at it as, oh, he was getting used to this offense with Kevin Stefanski, and then he got used to that offense with Kevin Stefanski. So do I buy into the splits of Baker without Odell Beckham? I do not. I think OBJ from an ADP standpoint is super, super interesting. One of the things that I always look for from a market standpoint is, are these players sort of being bought at their floor? And are there assumptions just generally being made by the consensus and by the masses? And I think you can make the argument, there's obvious reasons as to why OBJ has sort of a depressed ADP versus what we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years. He hasn't produced for like three seasons. Like, let's just call it what it is, right? But at the same time, we are all assuming that the Browns are going to be a run-heavy team, which, yes, that's the most probable outcome. They're going to be run-heavy, but what if they're a little bit more pass-heavy than they were last year? But then on top of that, I'm working on a study right now. I did it, a running back study last week. I've looked at how to spot breakout running backs in the past. I've looked at how to spot breakout wide receivers. And I sort of expanded on that on an episode of the Late Round Podcast that I did last week. And in that, I looked at what I call ambiguous backfields. But what I've found also is that ambiguous wide receiver situations are also a way to spot these breakouts happening. A lot of breakout players, and by that, I'm defining them as players who exceed expectation by a whole lot, ADP expectation by 100 or more points. And if you look at the players who have done that, they've been in wide receiving groups that were ambiguous, that didn't have clear alphas necessarily. The average wide receiver one was being drafted in that fifth or sixth round range because we don't know who the wide receiver one is. But when you dig into that ambiguous group or the breakout group of guys who have exceeded expectation by 100 or more points, there's twice as strong of a hit rate among wide receivers who are drafted as their team wide receiver ones. And so what I'm saying there is essentially OBJ, right? He's the first Cleveland Brown wide receiver who's being drafted. And so there's a lot of like those market mechanisms that are working in Odell Beckham's favor where, and you can even throw, I mean, he's not part of this group, but you can even throw like a Kenny Golladay in there for me where, I look at him on paper and I'm like, yeah, sure. I could get behind this. I understand you know, why there's downside, why there's upside, etc. But then you just sort of plug your nose and you say, I'm just going to hit draft here because a lot of these trends seem to fit this player. And that's sort of how I feel about Odell Beckham.
Now, Yates, JJ makes a great point, too. The productivity hasn't really been there for Odell, but also the health hasn't always been there. Let's be honest. Even since he came into the league, he's been a guy that struggled mightily with injuries. Now we can look in the recent productivity and say, well, a lot of transitional offenses, you know, quarterback in decline and then playing with a young quarterback kind of getting his feet under him. But are you somebody that would take Odell at that 25 ADP, or maybe later on you get a guy like Jarvis Landry, maybe a safer floor, but clearly not the upside? How do you feel about those two Browns wide receivers in this mid-round territory?
Sure. Well, this is different from OBJ in previous seasons, where OBJ a couple years ago, or even last year, we were still drafting him as a top 15 wide receiver. Now his ADP has fallen to the point where I think it's in line with expectations. I've got him at wide receiver 23 right now in my rankings. So I think that OBJ does have some built-in upside. Obviously, he's a top 10 wide receiver talent in the NFL. It's just been a while since we've seen him on the field, so we forget exactly what he brings to the table. Last year, it wasn't fantastic, right? Because I think they were trying to force him the ball. Baker was not fully settled into the offense, and we saw that offense truly take off as the year progressed. So I think that OBJ is going to be able to come in this year and really just settle into his role. And I think that we could see this offense continue to ascend even further than what it did last year. So OBJ does have some upside there where you're drafting him. And just like JJ said, like, it's one of those points where you probably don't feel super great about drafting him, but he does come with the upside. The reverse of that is Jarvis Landry further down the board. And you said wide receiver 38 in ADP. I've got him at wide receiver 35 in my rankings, but it's a different conversation because of Landry's skill set and what he brings to the table. With Landry, you're getting a safe floor option. You know what you're getting. He really does not come with upside. So I think it all depends. If you're going to draft Jarvis Landry at that spot in your draft, it's going to depend on what you did in the first couple rounds. Did you take some shots on some guys? You know, did you take a player like Jamar Chase earlier on, or, you know, someone, DJ Chark, T. Higgins, these guys who have enormous potential, but do have a little bit of a lower floor, then you might want to pair him with a Jarvis Landry who comes with that ability to kind of settle out your lineup. So I think both of these guys are priced pretty fairly, actually.
I think it's a great point, Yates. Roster construction enters so much into those two particular players and what those first two wide receivers you take and maybe which you want to take next if you do want to take one of these guys from the Browns. Let's change gears and talk about the Steelers. Let's stay in the AFC North here. Chase Claypool is at 27, Juju Smith-Schuster at 29. Now, Yates, Claypool, you know, I think you and I have been tougher on Claypool maybe than some other people, but as much as I like the talent, we've heard some rumblings there might be some issues there, a little off the field, maybe some personality conflicts and things of that nature. He had some massive games, some huge moments, and then some dormant time, whereas Juju maybe wasn't spectacular, but quietly productive when you ended up looking on a weekly basis. And then the other concept looking at the Steelers this year, Yates, is the idea that, well, Najee Harris is here now, so maybe a little bit more opportunity to throw the ball downfield, a little bit more time that Ben Roethlisberger doesn't have to basically hike the ball and then throw it with consecutive motion. So how do you justify the value of these two guys, Claypool, Juju? Is this another roster construction question, or is it clearer you just like one of these guys more for a certain reason?
Yeah, I really like Claypool at his current draft price, and I will be taking him in drafts this year because I think from what we saw last year, that was incredible for Chase Claypool, who was, don't forget, we were talking about this guy converting to a tight end in the pre-draft process before he came out, and then he comes into the NFL and just absolutely lights it up last year as a wide receiver. You have to expect and project that there's going to be some development, like you do with any year one to year two wide receiver. You hope that they continue to build on what they showed in year one. So I do think that we're going to see Claypool take another step forward. I wouldn't be shocked to see him lead this Steelers wide receiver core in touchdowns. So I like Claypool there. Go back to the episode that Dan and I just did on players to avoid, and you're going to hear my argument on why I am not taking Juju Smith-Schuster anywhere near his draft price this year. Just based on the offense and where it is trending, what it is going towards, I think we're going to see two tight end sets here quite a bit in Pittsburgh. So Juju Smith-Schuster, I'm not drafting him anywhere near his draft price at wide receiver 29. With the overall pie being, lessened as far as overall pass attempts, naturally, just based on what Pittsburgh has signaled that they want to do with drafting Najee Harris in the first round, then there's not as much there to go around for Deontay Johnson, who we know is going to eat his targets, then Chase Claypool, and then what's left over for Juju Smith-Schuster, who is not exactly the model of efficiency. So I think Juju Smith-Schuster, man, I'm just out at that price tag. I would love to hear JJ's thoughts, though, on Juju.
Yeah, JJ, how do you feel about where Juju is right now? Is he undervalued or, in your opinion, possibly getting to a situation where, like Yates is saying, maybe he becomes the odd man out of that trio?
I couldn't agree more with Yates. I wish I disagreed just to make this a little bit more interesting, but I couldn't agree more. You know, if you look at Claypool and what he did last year, he had 9 receiving touchdowns and 2 rushing touchdowns. And if you look at rookie wide receivers since the late 90s who had 10 or more total touchdowns during their rookie seasons, you had Randy Moss, Odell Beckham, Tyreek Hill, who had some in the return game, Mike Evans, Mike Williams, and Calvin Ridley. That's it. That's a heck of a group to be a part of for Chase Claypool. The other thing I want to add to this, I mean, I agree with everything that Yates just said. You know, a lot of people are going to look at the Steelers offensive line this year and say it's trash, it's bad, you know, yada, yada, yada. But it goes back to what I talked about with Odell Beckham, where we're making these assumptions about these players and about these teams that I think are almost overemphasized, almost too baked in to some of these situations where, you know, last year we saw these 3 wide receivers, especially Claypool at times last year with a ceiling, and Deontay Johnson obviously thrived, but we saw them thrive and they had good seasons. And that was behind a really, really pathetic offensive line to the point where they had to change their offense to be the way that it was last year with those quick slants and those low A dot throws. They did that because the offensive line was so bad. So you should ask yourself instead of saying the offensive line is still going to be bad because they lose David DeCastro and, you know, they don't use, you know, their first round draft capital on a tackle or a guard. They go after Najee Harris instead. What you should really be saying is, can it get much worse than it was last year? Can that offensive line really be that much worse than it was last year? And I think there's an argument to say that no, it might not be. And so as a result of that, you know, you might see Ben, you know, he was the fastest to get rid of the ball last year in the entire NFL when he dropped back to pass. I think that we'll see that time in pocket increase just a little bit, and that's going to allow Chase Claypool to catch more passes down the field. So I am totally with you. And the other thing too, in this range, just generally speaking, in this range of drafts historically, the hit rates for wide receivers have been very, very bad. Like worse than people probably would be able to think and comprehend. It's really, you know, there's a lot of guys that meet expectation, but there's not a lot of guys who far exceed expectation or become, you know, true league winning players. So when I'm in this area of the draft, I'm not looking for a Juju Smith-Schuster or a Jarvis Landry or these guys who, you know, have high floors and they're going to play the slot. And we know that they're safe options week over week, unless I'm in a very, very deep league where I'm starting 6 wide receivers or something like that. But you know, I'm looking for these guys who could be true league winning players, and Chase Claypool, you know, sometimes we get these players, these wide receivers, where their athleticism does indeed transfer from college to the pros. And we saw that with DK Metcalf, and I feel the same sort of vibes right now with how we saw DK Metcalf go from year 1 to year 2 with Chase Claypool.
All right, good stuff there. Before we get to the next grouping here, I want to take a moment to recognize Fantrax, because they are the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry, offering the greatest fantasy experience for your Dynasty, Keeper, Redraft, and Best Ball leagues. Fantrax free NFL Fantasy Football League Manager is the most customizable, easy-to-use, and feature-rich platform in the industry. And coming from another service, Fantrax can import all of your current leagues and customize if needed. They've got the support for 365 days a year. They never sleep, I'm telling you right now. And I'll tell you what, seriously, I've set up many leagues over on Fantrax before. We used to do big charity leagues over on Fantrax. It's amazing how detailed you can get, how specific you can get, how unique and creative you can get with some of these customizations. I know because I've done them. It is really incredible what the offering is, because everyone's looking for something new and kind of shake things up a little bit. But if you're not, and you're just looking to run your simple Yahoo or ESPN kind of format too, they can do that just as easily. They have hundreds of custom settings for team structure, custom playoffs, custom scoring, but then they can just do the regular old leagues too. They can do it all over on Fantrax. So there's a reason why fantasy players who try Fantrax make it a permanent switch and a permanent home for their fantasy leagues. And you can sign up today for free and be entered to win a signed Josh Allen jersey. Just go to Fantrax.com/fantasypros and sign up today. Again, that's Fantrax.com/fantasypros. Get that Josh Allen jersey. That sounds pretty good. That's all from Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports. Now, boys, let's continue to go through these mid-round wide receivers. And let's go with 2 guys who are young with upside. Last year, we saw a great finish to the season from Brandon Ayuk. Very exciting stuff there. He really thrived down the stretch. He was a league winner for a lot of teams. And then there's DJ Shark, who 2 years ago kind of broke out. Then last year dealt with a lot of injuries, dealt with an offense that, let's just be kind and say, was underperforming. So, JJ, I want to start with you with these two. Ayuk is at 26 in terms of ADP, wide receiver value. Shark is at wide receiver 30. Any interest in either of these guys and why?
Yeah, so I want to preface this by saying that I think that Brandon Ayuk is a very, very talented wide receiver. I you know, from a dynasty standpoint, go ahead, buy, feel good about him if you have him. The issue I have with Ayuk is that last season, you know, we did see pretty unfavorable splits when both Debo Samuel and George Kittle were healthy, and a large, you know, that large stretch where he was basically performing like Justin Jefferson. That large stretch where he was doing very well was when those guys were banged up. And so I think that you have an issue with Debo and George Kittle both being healthy, but then you have this Trey Lance issue. And I don't, you know, I think Trey Lance has a crazy ceiling and I like him as a fantasy player. I'm drafting a lot of Trey Lance this year, actually. But, you know, I like Trey Lance as a fantasy asset. I like his ceiling from a real football perspective. But I did some studies this offseason that looked at both how rookie quarterbacks impact their pass catchers and their running backs, and then also how mobile quarterbacks impact their pass catchers and running backs. Both of those things, if you have a mobile quarterback and a rookie quarterback, that's bad for pass catchers. And a lot of it really comes down to the fact that those mobile quarterbacks are stealing a larger chunk and market share of their offenses. And then on top of that, they're typically coming from run heavy teams. And then that doesn't necessarily help the wide receivers on those teams. So you need a larger target share when that's the case. And then you look at Ayuk's situation, and look, I'm a firm believer that target shares are earned and that targets are earned and that good wide receivers are seeing targets because they're getting opened. It's not some default, you know, I'm throwing to this guy just because he's on the field. He has to get open in order to see those targets. You know, this is the Deontay Johnson conundrum, right? I think Deontay Johnson is good because he's a good route runner and they're throwing him the ball, as opposed to, oh, this guy's just standing there, so I'm going to throw the ball to him. So you know, Ayuk is some, but I will say that's more from a floor standpoint, from when you're projecting these guys. Where you'll really see ceilings from players in terms of target share is when there isn't that, where there is that lack of competition within that team, and where you have just a larger pie for these guys to grab hold of. And with San Francisco, they have the easiest schedule in the league when looking at projected wins. They have a rookie quarterback potentially. Even if they start Jimmy Garoppolo for the first half of the season, we know that it's likely that Trey Lance will see the field at some point. And then on top of that, he's a mobile quarterback. So there's a lot of things working against Brandon Ayuk this year, so I'm generally fading Ayuk. And the other thing too, with rookie quarterbacks, I didn't even get to that, and this will be a good segue to DJ Chark, but with rookie quarterbacks, over the last decade, so since 2011, we've seen 29 rookie quarterbacks see the majority of their pass attempts on their teams, and none of them have been able to give us multiple pass catcher relevant seasons in fantasy football, and that includes the tight end position. So if you think that George Kittle is going to blow up this year, then you should not think that Brandon Ayuk is going to blow up, because historically we just have not seen that happen. The only sort of season where we saw that happen was when Andrew Luck was a rookie, and we saw Reggie Wayne and T.Y. Hilton do okay. I think it was Hilton who, you know, was like a fringe wide receiver 3. That's really what we're looking at. So where he's being drafted, it's just tough.
Excuse me, JJ, but is Trevor Lawrence closer to that Andrew Luck mold because he is such an incredible prospect of like that we're waiting for? And look, we've compared him quite a bit to, we haven't seen a quarterback prospect this good since Andrew Luck. So is that actually something where the trend bucks?
Yeah, I think that it's very possible. And that's what I was going to say, too. I think that you know, of all prospects that we've seen over the last decade, this is the guy who matches up with Andrew Luck the most. And so you could sit there and say, well, then we might see multiple pass catchers in that offense be relevant. And I would agree. I would agree with that. Of all the rookie quarterbacks, that Jacksonville offense is probably the offense that we would see more than one wide receiver really pan out. But if you're going to look at history again, number one, we don't see very high ceilings either from even one wide receiver on these rookie quarterbacks teams. And if we're going to see that this season with a rookie quarterback to a wide receiver, I think we'd all probably put our eggs into the Allen Robinson basket, if anything, as opposed to banking on one of these Jacksonville wide receivers. So to me, I'm more inclined to say it's probably not going to be DJ Chark, just from a probability standpoint. You know, I'm not the most impressed. I don't think that DJ Chark is the most impressive wide receiver on the planet. I think he's fine, but I'm also intrigued by what they could do with like a Laviska Shenault. And we know sort of what DJ Chark's ceiling looks like. Whereas I don't think that we saw that at all last season with how they used Laviska Shenault. And if this new coaching staff, which again, that's another topic that we can probably talk about for 10 minutes. This coaching staff, I don't trust that much either, but if this coaching staff does use Shenault in a way, whether he's playing in the slot and you can get him downfield a little bit more, if they use him in more creative ways, he would be the one that I would prefer versus DJ Chark this year in that Jacksonville offense.
Some incredible stuff there, JJ Yates. You know, I know, you know, what JJ just mentioned there too, is what's shying me away from Kittle so much this year too, at that current ADP he's at. I'm just not buying it there. I like the other players around him more, but when it comes down to Ayuk, I feel like if I'm going to take a risk somewhere with somebody kind of winning out, I'd rather take it later with Ayuk. How do you feel about that same risk where he's at currently in ADP? And how do you feel about DJ Shark's ability to return his investment as well?
Sure. So with Ayuk, I've got him at wide receiver 33 in my rankings from a projection standpoint. And that is because it's volume. You're trying to find the volume here for Ayuk. So if he is going to return the value of wherever he was at, 26 in ADP, right, then that has to be on the back of insane efficiency. And I mean, if there was ever an offense to produce insane efficiency across the board, it's probably San Francisco with Trey Lance here. So I think that we could see that. But with a healthy George Kittle, with a healthy Deebo Samuel, I just don't see the volume there for Ayuk. But we know that Deebo Samuel has struggled with injury. We know that George Kittle has struggled with injury. So if you're, but that's not something that I want to bank on. I think we can see Ayuk hit a ceiling where he produces as a top 15 wide receiver because we've seen it. But I think that's going to have to mean that George Kittle is missing time with an injury or Deebo Samuel is missing time with an injury. So I do like Ayuk. I think that he has upside. I would just prefer to see his ADP just a little bit further down the board. With DJ Chark, I've got him at wide receiver 25. So I think that he is a perfectly fine investment, but he does come, like I mentioned earlier, with a little bit lower of a floor because of this offense and the coaching staff. I don't know what to expect. Are we going to see Trevor Lawrence immediately step in and produce like Andrew Luck did in his rookie season, or just like, you know, just come out of the gates on fire? I really don't think that that's going to be the case. I like Lawrence's long-term projection. I think that he is an incredibly safe floor prospect, very, very high floor prospect. And I like what he can do year two, year three, year one, right out of the gate. I just don't know if that's going to lead to DJ Chark producing as a top 12 wide receiver, top 15, top even top 20. I just don't think that we can get there. So I think that he's fine, a fine investment at his price point. I'm not going to argue against it, but there are some other guys here that I'd prefer to take some shots on over him.
All right, before we get to the Bengals boys, and there's a lot to dissect with those three wide receivers, I want to tell you about a sponsor of the show, and that's IP Vanish. IP Vanish is a virtual private network, a VPN for short, and a VPN, that means it's a super important tool that can help you safely browse the internet. Again, whether it's your computers, your tablets, your phones, or even things like your Fire Stick, it can protect all of those. And when you're using a VPN, all your data is encrypted. When you're reading, what you're reading, what you're searching for, what you're watching, and whatever it is you're doing on the internet, IP Vanish can help make sure that it stays private. That's important because what you're doing on the internet is no one's business but yours, and IP Vanish can help you remain anonymous and secure on the internet. For listeners of the show, IP Vanish is offering incredible 65% off. That's just $3.49 for the first month and $31.49 for the year. And everything you get is an anonymous IP address. You can circumvent any online censorship, get protection with using public Wi-Fi and 24/7 tech support. So you go to ipvanish.com/pros and claim your 65% savings. Again, they have plans starting at just $3.49 a month and $31.49 for the year. This is the time to sign up with that discount. Again, it's ipvanish.com/pros to get your 65% off. And again, you can get that today at ipvanish.com. All right, let's get to the Bengals, because there's not one, not two, but three guys in this grouping here. And I think in drafts, we've all seen some varying ADP of our own, but consensus right now, if you go to Fantasy Pros to see that ADP, you've got Higgins at 28 in terms of wide receiver number, Chase at wide receiver 31, and Boyd at 34. Now, I've seen Chase go way higher than this. I've seen him go a little bit later, actually, too, in some other drafts recently. Yates, I want to start with you. When you break down these three, we're talking about just three separation points here in terms of wide receiver between Higgins, Chase, and then Chase and Boyd. So how do you kind of break down these three guys in your opinion? Is this the proper order to draft them, or you want to take Chase ahead of those guys, ahead of T. Higgins, and reverse that? How do you feel?
This reminds me of the Dallas wide receiver core as far as the gaps there. And then you just take them and you slide them way down the board because it's not going to be as dynamic of an offense, right, as they're in Dallas. So I've got Ja'Marr Chase at wide receiver 21 right now. I've got T. Higgins at wide receiver 26. And then I have Tyler Boyd a little bit further down the board at wide receiver 43. And that's just because of the touchdowns. I've only got him with 4 touchdowns on the year. So I think he's going to be fine. I've got him with 116 targets on the year. T. Higgins with 123 and Chase with 136. This offense is going to be throwing the ball a ton. We know that there's not a ton of depth behind him either at the wide receiver 4 spot or tight end spot with Drew Sample there. And what happens if we do see Joe Mixon go down with an injury again? Then we could see those target totals increase even more. I think Chase is going to see his ADP rise as we get into the preseason, as we start to see him on the field again, because don't forget that we haven't seen him on the field in over a year, but reuniting with Joe Burrow, I think that that can be nothing but good things for fantasy football. And T. Higgins, the initial reaction when they drafted Chase at number 5 overall in the 2021 NFL draft was, well, Higgins is dead from a fantasy standpoint. No. Like, there is more than enough volume here for Higgins to continue to produce, just like Claypool, what I talked about, projecting from and taking that step from year 1 to year 2. Higgins came out on fire last year. So I think we can see him build on that. I think this offense is going to be great from a fantasy perspective, but I do think that a little bit less than what we might talk about with Dallas.
Yeah, Higgins getting a lot of positive pub too this offseason about work ethic and the work he's put in. JJ, when you're looking at this trio here, is it the same kind of situation where you think, oh, maybe this is the kind of like the dollar store version of the Dallas Cowboys wide receiving trio? Or do you think, like Yates, that there is really enough here also for your fantasy beak to get wet? Because I was somebody that was very much into Higgins going into this year. Then they drafted Chase and I got a little concerned. I'm kind of like Yates now, where I'm back into Higgins because he's fallen to a place where it becomes a very interesting buy. How do you break down these three guys?
Yeah, I love T. Higgins. I think at the end of the day, like in August, once we see where these ADPs really, really settle, Higgins is going to be the guy of the three that I target the most, just given where he will probably be drafted at. And you know, the other thing too, with the Dallas light, if you will, with this Bengals offense, Zach Taylor, since he took over as head coach, they've been incredibly pass heavy, and it's not just because they've been incredibly bad. If you look at how they've done in neutral game scripts, 2 years ago when Cincinnati was bad, they had a higher pass to rush ratio in neutral game scripts than their overall ratio was, which is bonkers because they were a terrible team in negative game scripts all the time. But they were actually even more pass heavy when games were close. And we see that with this offense. And so, you know, to Kyle's point, you know, we're going to see a lot of volume in this offense, and that's going to allow all three of these wide receivers to be relevant in some way. I think Tyler Boyd is the loser, though, of this Ja'Marr Chase draft pick, mostly because of what I sort of talked about earlier or alluded to earlier with slot guys. You know, slot guys are generally going to be more volume dependent than guys who can play the perimeter, because guys in the perimeter, you know, are more than likely more physical specimens who can be these creators in the red zone and close to the end zone. You know, think of it this way. Outside receivers, perimeter receivers can usually come in and play the slot. Slot guys can't always go to the outside and play on the outside. That's as easy as is the thing of it. So all of a sudden you have Tyler Boyd who's sort of locked into this role, whereas a guy like Higgins or Chase can move all over the field and play all over the field if need be. And that's another reason why to be low on a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster and to be lower on a guy like Jarvis Landry. But we've seen Landry at least play relatively well on the outside when he's been called upon. Juju has not. But with this offense, yeah, I mean, I love Ja'Marr Chase. He was one of the best prospects that my model that dates back to 2006 has ever seen. His production profile is elite. He's got good athleticism, good enough athleticism, I should say. But I will say with the caveat that, you know, let's just be realistic about this. We don't see rookie wide receivers perform exceptionally, exceptionally well, you know, in during their rookie seasons from a fantasy perspective. And really, if we end up seeing Ja'Marr Chase be the first wide receiver on this Bengals team get drafted, you know, I mentioned earlier how I look for wide receiver ones in this range to draft because they generally hit at a higher rate. Well, I actually tweeted this earlier today, but if you look at rookie wide receiver ones that have been drafted, you know, they exceed expectation, ADP expectation by a decent enough amount, but they're rarely like league winning players. And that's really sort of the fear I have with Chase is that, is he going to be that? But I mean, if you're going to bet on a rookie wide receiver, it's gotta be a guy like Ja'Marr Chase with that kind of background and profile. So, you know, I think from a value standpoint, I like Higgins the most. Overall, I probably would lean Chase right now, but I think Higgins is going to be the guy that I have the most of this year.
JJ, you know, because now you've kind of said it twice here, I'm curious to ask you, when you talk about there not being a lot of league winners and not liking this grouping, are you somebody that conversely likes to hit or double tap big time wide receivers early in your draft? Are you somebody that would go, you know, in the 10, 11, 12 spot double wide receiver because you don't like this grouping?
Yeah, so one of the things that the way I approach fantasy in general, I know that it's getting a little bit more steam this year, but that anchor RB or zero, not a modified zero RB or hero RB, whatever the heck you want to call it, RB.
I like hero RB. That sounds really exciting. Let's call it that.
Al Zeidenfeld once coined it RB and chill, which I thought was pretty funny. You know? So you just get that running back in the first round, that anchor for you. Because if you look at hit rates in what's been dubbed the running back dead zone, which some have said is round 3 to 6, even if you want to lower that a little bit and say rounds 4 and 5, the hit rates for running backs in that area aren't very good. And then the hit rates for wide receivers, conversely, in that area are very good. Whether you're looking at league winners being drafted there or guys who are just really exceeding expectation. And so I generally will go with wide receivers in that area. And then you actually see the reverse then start to happen once you hit like rounds 6 to 8. Where running backs start to get a little bit more attractive and wide receivers get a little bit less attractive. So if I'm in a full PPR league where I can flex a guy playing 3 wide receivers, yeah, I'm going to go with one of those modified zero RB approaches.
All right, 2 guys last year that had some injury issues, Cortland Sutton, wide receiver 32, and of course, Deebo Samuel at 33. Yates, are you buying back in on either of these guys?
Cortland Sutton, I've got right in this range. I've got him at wide receiver 30, and that is assuming that he takes that wide receiver 1 role back. I think that he has the talent. I think that he's incredibly talented. And if we have Aaron Rodgers in Denver, then
Sign me up for Cortland Sutton
as a top 15 wide receiver. But with Teddy Bridgewater or Drew Lock as his quarterback, I'm a little bit more hesitant. Deebo Samuel's the one that I'm going to be like pumping the brakes on here and say it's a very similar argument to Brandon Ayuk. It's the volume. And with Deebo Samuel, you're relying on insane efficiency, like ridiculous efficiency. I put out this tweet a while back and it got a ton of steam. Deebo Samuel finished with 401 yards after the catch last year. He had 391 total receiving yards when the year was all done. So he had more yards after the catch than he did receiving yards. Like, that just blew my mind, breaks my mind. And he had an ADOT of 2.2 yards. So you are betting on just ridiculous, ridiculous efficiency with Deebo Samuel. Can he do it? Is he incredibly talented? Yes, absolutely. But you also have to factor in the injury risk here. So with Deebo Samuel, it's kind of going to JJ's point. Is he going to be a league winner? No, I really don't think so. I think that he can be a solid flex play for you. But as a league winner, there are some other guys here that we're going to talk about, like, you know, in this range that I would prefer to take a shot on over him.
I don't want to be presumptive, JJ, but I can only assume from everything you just said before about the 49ers that Deebo is also not your cup of tea. Is Cortland Sutton potentially a bounce back candidate for you after 2 years ago looking like a really strong, at least wide receiver too?
Yeah, so, you know, I think with Deebo, this is such a cop-out answer, but it's one of those situations where I'm going to feel a lot better about him in a best ball format because I think there's just a lot of variance involved in how he's going to score each week. And there's also variance involved in how this Trey Lance pick and him being a more mobile quarterback impacts what Deebo does for that team close to the line of scrimmage and how they're going to utilize him. So there's that too. So there's just a lot of variance with Deebo. I don't mind him if you're going more best ball, but in a managed league, it's a little bit more difficult to back him. But if you look at Cortland Sutton, I also sent a tweet out this week where I've seen the take that Drew Lock is better for Cortland Sutton and Teddy Bridgewater is better for Jerry Jeudy. I get it. I understand the logic behind that because Teddy isn't the most aggressive passer in the world. And Drew Lock is a little bit of a D-gaffer. But, you know, at the same time, Drew Lock isn't very good. And so I don't know if, we need Drew Lock in order to unlock, no pun intended, Cortland Sutton there in that Broncos offense. You know, we've seen Sutton perform well with bad quarterback play. And he sort of fits like that I mean, honestly, it makes sense that he's being drafted around an Odell Beckham. It makes sense that he's being drafted around a Kenny Golladay, right? These are the same sort of archetypes, wide receivers that are big play. They have big playability. They're perimeter guys, but we have question marks around them regarding their health and regarding their situations just in general. But we know that just buying into those players can be profitable in fantasy football. And again, I'm just going back to all those trends and looking at what's worked historically. And I'm saying that, yeah, I don't have Courtland Sutton ranked ahead of where he's being drafted, but I will draft Courtland Sutton because of those trends.
All right. And good dad joke there too. Well done, by the way, on the lock. Well done. Very nice. All right. Before we get to that next grouping, I want to tell everybody about Pristine Auction, another one of the sponsors of our show here on Fantasy Pros. Pristine Auction has daily auctions ending nightly with hundreds of amazing things. If you haven't gone on there, I don't know what you're waiting for. They've got helmets, they've got jerseys, they've got bats, they've got balls, they've got everything you could possibly imagine. They've got artwork, they've got Marvel stuff, they've got everything. It's so cool what they've got. And not all of it is super expensive. Some of it is actually pretty reasonable. And you could just go in there and bid on some fun things. You could put them in your office, you could put them, you know, in your man cave, your she shed. It doesn't matter. They do have things that are affordable, and everything there is authentic. They all come with that authenticity certification, which is so important to make sure what you're getting is the real deal. And that's what Pristine Auction lives by. And of course, when you have a free registration and it's free to bid, I have no idea what's keeping you. So go right now to Fantasy Pros, and obviously you can do where we got our contest running right now. Thanks to Pristine Auction as well. We're giving away an autographed jersey just to prove how great everything is there. But if you go to pristineauction.com, again, that's Pristine auction.com, you get $5 on us just for signing up. You just have to put the code Fantasy Pros in that registration field. So go to pristineauction.com, put in Fantasy Pros, get your $5, start bidding today. Again, that's pristineauction.com, Pristine auction.com. Boys, I want to get to this next group here because we are starting to get to that lower tier of wide receiver, and maybe we're going to find some guys that hit. Two guys coming off a season that I think maybe people didn't quite expect, right? We got Robbie Anderson at wide receiver 35, certainly much better, I think, than anybody expected out of the gate last year, and Will Fuller at wide receiver 36. Wow, what a season, until, of course, the inevitable Will Fuller disappointment. But this was a new kind of disappointment for us. So, Yates, I want to talk about these two guys because you got Anderson and Fuller all the way at 35 and 36. Are there going to be shares of these two players on any of your rosters this year?
I mean, everyone who was listening to the podcast last year knew that I was hyping up Robbie Anderson. Now, did I expect the type of season that he had? Absolutely not. That far exceeded my expectations. So I think moving into this year, you do have a little bit of reason to be concerned. I don't think that we can completely copy and paste what we had from last year into this year. Now, DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey back into the fold, taking away a ton of targets. That's going to be a huge thing. Terrace Marshall on the outside, he's going to open things up for everyone underneath. I think Anderson's going to be fine. I like him at this price point. I've got him just a little bit lower, but I think that he's going to be a fine and safe option. Do I think that he has the potential to be a league winner? No, I don't. Because of DJ Moore, because of Christian McCaffrey, you add in Dan Arnold here, Tommy Tremble that they drafted. You know, I think that there are other options here that are going to just take away enough targets that Robbie Anderson can't just completely be dependent upon volume. So obviously the connection with Sam Darnold is there for him, but the volume concerns are there. So I like him. Don't like him any higher than this. With the other player that you mentioned of Will Fuller, you have to bake in that he's going to miss a game. We know that. So right. That's enough to push him
and
down the
board.
And
that's just from suspension, everybody who's listening too. That's not baking in Will Fuller's injury history. There's want to be clear what Yates is saying there for everybody.
Correct. And so, you know, I think for him to return a wide receiver 36 value, you know, if especially because you're not going to have him that first week of the season, then he's got to be just insanely efficient. And we know Tags has mentioned the splits with or without Deshaun Watson. Like if you're buying Will Fuller here at this ADP, then you are betting that Tua Tagovailoa is going to take a massive step forward, or that Jaylen Waddle is not going to be involved very much, which I completely disagree with. So I've got Fuller down the board here. I would not be buying him at this price point. I think if I can get him at a little bit more of a value as a flex play, a guy that I can rotate in when he is healthy, because I do think that he's going to bring some upside here or there, but I just don't think it's going to be consistent enough to rely upon.
All right. JJ, how do you feel about Will Fuller on the one-year show-me deal and Anderson getting his old quarterback from New York now in Carolina?
Yeah, so I'll start with Robbie. You know, the one thing with Anderson is that we know that what's stickiest year over year analytically is volume. And so last season, Robbie Anderson with a 26% target share, a really surprising target share. But I actually went back because I was just curious. But I went back and I looked at because I look at not just overall target share, because that can be skewed a little bit if a guy played 16 games or 14 games or what have you. But I looked at prorated target share. So essentially target share per game times 16 games. Over the last 4 years, Robbie Anderson has hit at least a 19.5% target share from a prorated standpoint per season. And if you look at all wide receivers over the last 4 years who have done that in each of the last four seasons, there's only been 15 of them. So he's really in sort of like this like rare air with the way that he's been seeing volume in the offenses that he's been in. It's just that he hasn't been in the most dynamic offenses in the world with the best quarterbacks. Now, is he going to see the best quarterback play with Sam Darnold in Carolina now? Probably not. And the really interesting thing to me with this offense is that everyone is associating, and rightfully so, the Robbie Anderson, Sam Darnold connection in New York, and how Robbie would have these huge plays and these huge games. But what's really interesting is that they used DJ Moore in that role last year in the Carolina offense. It wasn't Robbie Anderson. Robbie Anderson was the possession guy. It was not that. DJ Moore was the higher A dot player. And so my fear, a little bit, my hesitation with Robbie Anderson is the fact that with Sam Darnold there instead of Teddy Bridgewater, we might get a more aggressive down the field thrower, and that might benefit DJ Moore a little bit more than what we saw last season. I also think DJ Moore is a very talented player, but I will say this, just given volume, and that's what we chase in fantasy, I do think that, you know, to Kyle's point, I think that Anderson is probably a good value, but not someone who's going to like far exceed expectation like we saw last season and be, you know, this like fringe top 10 guy who you're plugging and playing and feeling really, really good about. So he's, again, one of those guys in this range who's fine, right? I understand if you start your draft with a little bit more volatility, a wide receiver, go ahead and get a guy like Robbie Anderson, because I don't think the volatility will be there, but I just don't know if the ceiling's going to be there. Regarding Will Fuller though, you know, if you look at what Miami's done this offseason, it makes total sense. Tua Tagovailoa is not a quarterback who throws into tight windows, or wants to throw into tight windows, I should say. He was forced to do that last year because of the wide receivers and the weapons that they have with Devontae Parker, Preston Williams. They're not guys who are getting separation. So what do? They go out and get Will Fuller, one of the biggest separators in all of football, and then they draft Jaylen Waddle, who's also a big separator. And so what that tells me is, you know, they know what they're doing with the quarterback that they have, and they're trying to fit this offense around that quarterback. That's a plus for the guys there, the separators there. It's a minus for a guy like Devontae Parker, I think. But even still, if you just look at this from a projection standpoint, it's really hard to get like super excited about Will Fuller and super excited even about Jaylen Waddle to a degree, unless Waddle just really, really hits as a prospect, which is always possible. So I'm with Kyle where he's fine enough. I think he's a better, he's a much easier best ball option just because I don't know how predictable Will Fuller's output is going to be on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I think best ball is probably, you're right, the best spot for Will Fuller if you're going to take a chance. And look, as your fourth wide receiver, you can get him there. Not too bad there in terms of what the upside is. But you kind of bring us to our next group here. When you mentioned Jaylen Waddle, we talk about, are there some league winners in this group? And I think that maybe one or two of these guys might be it for you. Let's see if I can get the boys to agree on this. Jerry Jeudy, wide receiver 37. Devontae Smith with the Philadelphia Eagles now, the rookie 40, and Jaylen Waddle, rookie with the Dolphins at 45. Now, JJ, Jerry Jeudy certainly separates. Jerry Jeudy did have some drop issues last year, but I think when you look at the prospect that Jerry Jeudy is on film, you get very excited about what could potentially be there. Dad jokes aside about Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater, your thoughts on Jeudy, Smith, and Waddle? Is there a league winner or two potentially in this grouping?
It's so tough because, you know, I like all these players. You know, I was pretty high on Jerry Jeudy coming out last year. I think Jeudy sort of the perception around Jeudy is sort of just wrong. You know, I think a lot of people see his rookie season as not being very good because he wasn't very efficient, but the peripheral numbers are definitely, I mean, his raw production is definitely there. His raw production wasn't even that bad for a rookie wide receiver, but the peripheral numbers were definitely there, where he had, you know, he was like sixth in air yards last year. He just wasn't converting at a high rate because the quarterback play, you know, wasn't very strong, which is another reason why I hope they go with Teddy. You know, from a real team building standpoint, I would say just throw Drew Lock under there. And if he's good, then he's good. And if he's not, then you get a high draft pick. But Teddy, you know, if you go with Teddy, it's better, for, in my opinion, from a fantasy standpoint, you're going to get a better quarterback. That's both for both Cortland Sutton and for Jerry Jeudy. But yeah, I like Jeudy a lot as a player, great route runner. I think that we could see sort of that Deontay Johnson type jump from Jeudy from year one to year two, where you just get this crisp route runner who could gobble up targets because he's open all the time. And so that's why, you know, of those three that you named, I'm probably most attracted to Jeudy from a value standpoint. You know, I mentioned earlier with the rookie quarterbacks who are being, or rookie wide receivers who are being drafted as wide receiver ones, historically, they have not had good hit rates at being true league winners. They've exceeded expectation. They've been fine enough, but they haven't given you a top 12 season over the last decade. There's been like 14 or 15 of them, and none of those wide receivers, none of those rookie wide receivers who were the top wide receivers drafted from their team have been true wide receiver ones in fantasy football and points per game over the last decade. So that's not good news for Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, or I guess Jalen Waddle is Will Fuller ahead of him. It's not good news for Devontae Smith, just from a trend standpoint. But I do think Smith is a safe enough bet, sort of like Robbie Anderson, where you're drafting this guy where he's going to see volume. You can feel safe about that volume, but I don't know if he's going to really exceed that expectation. And then with Jalen Waddle, it's just a similar feel as how I feel about Will Fuller, where the fit is right. It makes total sense. I think Waddle's going to play a lot in the slot there, which should open things up for him and allow him to see softer coverage. So maybe because of that and just because of the ambiguity, I'd be most attracted to him of all Dolphins wide receivers. But that's not necessarily saying a lot because I'm not necessarily super, super high in hype on those Dolphins wide receivers.
Yeah, personally, I'm more on the Jeudy and Smith wagon, especially when you're talking about number one wide receivers on their respective teams actually being pretty good, even though they're further down the ADP trough. I think Smith might indeed be that guy. Yates, do you think that Jerry Jeudy kind of gets a bad reputation basically off last year because Justin Jefferson did what he did? I mean, I almost feel like such an incredible new standard that was set last year, right, by Jefferson, that any other rookie wide receiver would just pale in comparison. And maybe that's just not fair when we're trying to evaluate the first time we've seen Jerry Jeudy in the NFL.
I think, yes, that can play a role in it, but I also think that the bad rep can come from the 46% catch rate. You know, people see that for Jerry Jeudy and they just go like, oh man, he sucks, which he does not. So I think with Jeudy, the conversation becomes, yes, incredibly talented, but can he establish himself as the clear wide receiver one on this offense from a target share perspective? I agree with JJ that Teddy Bridgewater is the best option for him to be that, but again, incredibly loaded offense. Cortland Sutton, KJ Hamler, Noah Fant, Albert Okwuegbunam. You have Javonte Williams now, who's a capable pass catcher out of the backfield. Melvin Gordon. Like, where are the targets? There's not a path here for Jerry Jeudy to see 120 plus targets. I just don't see that happening. So that's the issue here. I think Jeudy is a safe option. I think that he can take another step forward, but it's a little bit of a risk when you're talking projections. With Devontae Smith, volume. I think that volume is going to be there, but JJ and I have talked about this. I don't think that Philadelphia is going to be a top 15 scoring offense. So are the scoring opportunities going to be there for Devontae Smith to push with the volume to push that up into a top 25, top 24 receiver? I just don't know if that's there. The guy that I am taking a shot on that I think could be a league winner in this range is Jalen Waddle. JJ talked about him going into the slot, and you know, some people are going to listen back to what we just said about Jarvis Landry and Juju Smith-Schuster, and they're going to be like, well, you just talked about slot receivers aren't safer or they don't bring much upside. It's a different type of slot receiver here with Jalen Waddle. And there are people who are now coming back to fantasy football who really did not pay much attention to the NFL draft. That's fine. We totally understand that. But now as you're starting to come back to the table, you need to know who these players are that are coming into the NFL. Jalen Waddle is the number 6 overall pick in the 2021 NFL draft, reuniting with his college quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa, is a perfect fit for the slot here in this offense. With Tua, what his skill set is he wants to get the ball out quickly and accurately, and he is incredible at that. He's going to be able to tick through his progressions, 1, 2, 3, and get the ball out quickly. Jalen Waddle, with his game-changing speed, is going to be able to create and have a very, very high yards per reception, which is different than what Jarvis Landry or Juju Smith-Schuster bring to the table. So Jaylen Waddle is going to be able to soak up targets in this offense because he fits to a skill set, and then he's going to be able to create after the catch. Tags and I talked about it frequently. We don't like the comparisons. Every time there's a fast receiver that comes into the NFL being compared to Tyreek Hill, every single NFL draft process, there's one. If there was ever one that we would compare to Tyreek Hill, it is Jaylen Waddle. So I think that from a value standpoint here at wide receiver 45 in ADP, Jaylen Waddle is someone that I am drafting every single chance that I can get.
Three Alabama boys from 37, 40, and 45 on your ADP. One of them, if not more, I think could potentially be a league winner. So lots of good discussion there. Last grouping here. These are basically boomer bust guys, whether you want to call them best ball wide receivers, whether you think in maybe in redraft leagues and regular formats that there's some love you want to throw their way. But I want to talk about Curtis Samuel, who's in a new spot now in Washington at wide receiver 41, Antonio Brown at 42, Devontae Parker at 43, and Marquise Brown at 44. So this is a grouping unto themselves. This is a little cluster. So Yates, let's start with you real quick on these. Give me your take. Are any of these guys, any Antonio Brown, Marquise Brown, any of the Browns finding their way onto Yates rosters, or is this just a hard pass when you start to get to that grouping here from 41 to 44?
I have not drafted Marquise Brown the past 2 years. Let's make it 3 years in a row. I'm not going anywhere near him. Devontae Parker, I think that we're going to see Will Fuller, and I think Parker will be fine. I think that he'll make an NFL impact. I just don't think that it's going to be as drastic for fantasy football. So I don't think that he's the guy that I'm going to be taking a shot on. Antonio Brown, I mean, it's the same argument with Mike Evans that I made earlier this week. It's like, this is an incredibly loaded offense. So unless we see one or two of these guys go down with injury, miss some time or something like that, I just don't see Antonio Brown suddenly skyrocketing. So I think that he's worth the shot on at that flex spot just in case that does happen. But Curtis Samuel is the guy that I'm really intrigued with, because last year we saw him kind of emerge as this guy that we finally saw, you know, okay, he can be something for fantasy football. Whereas over the past couple of years, he's always had the talent, but just could never break through. Last year, 97 targets, 77 receptions, a 79% catch rate, 851 receiving yards, only three touchdowns. But here's the thing, is had an ADOT of 7.5. So he was filling more of that possession style receiver. You know, and we talked about DJ Moore earlier, DJ Moore being that field stretcher. Curtis Samuel filled that role alongside Robbie Anderson, whereas where he was reuniting with Ron Rivera, right, in 2019, 105 targets, 54 receptions, 627 yards, six receiving touchdowns, and an ADOT of 14.8. Very, very drastic and different roles that he was filling from the offense that he had with Ron Rivera in Carolina in 2019 to what he had with Joe Brady and Matt Rhule in 2020. So which version of Curtis Samuel are we going to see here in this offense? Are we going to see him utilize more as that field stretching option? I think that we absolutely could see that because he's got the speed to do it. So I just think it's a little bit of a risk drafting Curtis Samuel, because what version of him are we going to get? At wide receiver 41, though, I think that that's built in, and I think that that's a perfectly fine spot to take Curtis Samuel.
JJ, your thoughts on Samuel, Antonio Brown, Parker, Marquise Brown? Any temptation with any of these guys here for you?
Yeah, so the Curtis Samuel stuff is so interesting to me too, because, you know, like you said, he was used as a deep threat the last time we saw him with Ron Rivera and Scott Turner, and then last year he's not necessarily used that way, but he still does well. I mean, he plays has a great season. But then, you know, he goes to Washington, and my immediate thought is, oh, he's opposite Terry McLaurin. They can use him as a field stretcher. McLaurin could be more of a possession guy. But then they go out and they draft Deami Brown.
Deami Brown.
who is that field? Like, that's what Deami Brown did in college. And then so I'm thinking to myself, how are they really going to utilize Curtis Samuel? So because of that, I agree. There's just a lot of variance with the direction that things could go with Samuel. And so, you know, he's fine. I have no problem if you want to go that route. And again, it's not like there's a high opportunity cost in getting Samuel where he's being drafted. So I'm cool with him. Antonio Brown, I think, is the guy that I like the most of this group. Because, you know, we saw last year when he stepped in, he had a pretty good target share per game average, despite Mike Evans and Chris Godwin both being there. But the other thing with AB is that you have that, you know, the assumption here is that he's the third wide receiver on the team, which he is. But what if something were to happen to either Chris Godwin or Mike Evans, and all of a sudden that ceiling raises pretty dramatically? You know, he could be a 25% target share per game kind of guy if one of those injuries happens. So to me, I think he has the best sort of like floor ceiling combo of any guy in this range. regarding Hollywood Brown, you know, what's so crazy about the, and I feel this way about Rashad Bateman to a degree too. I love Bateman as a player, don't get me wrong, but like the situation itself, Marquise Brown last year, the final six games of the season, he had a target share per game of like 35%. It was something just completely out of control. We don't see that. That was what Michael Thomas averaged 2 years ago when he blew up. That was his target share. So Marquise Brown has this 35, 36% target share per game. He scores a touchdown on average. He scores one touchdown per game on average throughout that stretch. He gave you zero wide receiver one performances during that stretch, despite those peripherals, despite the fact that we're giving him a touchdown per game and he had a 36% target share. And the reason for that is because the offense that he's in. You know, I do think that Baltimore is going to be a little bit more pass heavy than they've been. But instead of just thinking, oh, they're going to be more pass heavy, think it's more pass heavy on one of the most run heavy offenses that we've seen over the last decade, right? And so they're still going to be a run heavy team. It's just they're going to be more pass heavy than they were in previous seasons, maybe. And so because of that, it's just really hard to, you know, with the Bateman add too, who I think is just a better player than Marquise Brown is, it's just really hard to get behind Brown right now. And then I already shared my Devontae Parker general take where, yeah, he fits that role for them. But I just don't think that he fits Tua nearly as well as a Will Fuller or a Jalen Waddle do.
He's the host of the Late Round Podcast and, of course, runs everything over at NumberFire. You can check him out on Twitter at LateRoundQB. If ever there was a right guest for a right show, it was you today, JJ. I want to thank you for coming on, man. Some great information, and everybody here is smarter for having spent this last hour or so with you. Tell everybody what else you got going on right now, because I'm sure it's a lot.
Thanks, I appreciate that. Yeah, so on the Late Round Podcast, I'm just kind of going through this series where I'm looking at breakout running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. I did the running back show this past week, had some really cool insights, and hopefully I'll be able to discover some insights at wide receiver and tight end as well. But that's on the Late Round Podcast.
There you go. And make sure everybody heads over to fantasypros.com/draftwizard. Get your cheat sheet creator. Again, you could have JJ, any of the experts you like, basically in there with you. Get your cheat sheets with your favorite experts in there, and every time they update their rankings or make a move, your cheat sheets will update. Again, that's fantasypros.com/draftwizard. I want to thank the sponsors of today's show, Pristine Auction. Again, that's pristineauction.com, Pristine, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. You get $5 credit with that code FANTASYPRO, so get in there and start bidding on some fun stuff. Also, IPVanish, go to ipvanish.com/pros, claim your 65% off savings, and don't forget about setting up your league over at Fantrax. It's free to set it up, the most customizable site in the universe in terms of getting the league that you want, or even just a simple league too in terms of the great features that they offer. But you got to go to fantrax.com/fantasypros, sign up today in order to make that work. And when you do, you are entered to win that Josh Allen autographed jersey. That'll do it for us, but the story of the game goes on. For Gates and JJ, I'm Joey P. We'll see you next time, kids.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros. And subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, It gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're going to love season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.